Hi everybody, this is Leechy and Sagarin.
Hello.
Once again, bringing you another edition of the Han Podcast for your enjoyment. By the way, if anybody has a better name than Han Podcast, then we'd love to get your thoughts. As usual, I'll create a Han Forum topic for everyone to comment on this podcast, and you can write up your suggestions there about a name, or indeed about anything else that you want to raise with us. What do you want us to talk about?
So, Peter, today we're going to be asking you a little bit about Lithia.com. Are you ready for some questions?
Yep, far away.
All right. So this first question comes to us from Rob Barnes, whose username is Krasma on the forum. What was the genesis of Lithia.com and the Harn forum, and how has it evolved?
Oh, these memories stretch back over 20 years, so I'm likely to get some of the dates wrong, and I apologize for that in advance. Still, it'll give you a rough chronology, I guess. So back in the early to mid-90s, the original Harn community centered around a bulletin board service called Duffelboard. That was run by Robin Crosby's close friend, Rob Duff. I wasn't part of the community at that time, but at some point, the BBS service was superseded by an email discussion list called Harnlist. This list was run by Steve McDonald. I think he was an astronomer. And he ran it off an email server on the university that he was attending. I think he was both attending classes and was employed somehow, but I'm not really sure about that. Anyway, whatever the case was, I joined the Harn list in maybe in 95. It might have been 96, I think. In 1998, Steve McDonald announced that he was retiring from administering the Harn list. While I don't know the full story about that, I think there might have been some issues with running a gaming email list on the university servers, but I think overall Steve wanted to dedicate more time to his studies, and I think he was also employed as an astronomer at Tufts University by this stage. So I thought long and hard about it, and I decided to take over, but I was fully aware of my responsibilities, or the responsibility that I was taking on. The first thing I needed to do was I needed to shift the email discussion list away from the server at Tufts University and provide it with a new home. So I looked around a bit and I purchased some web hosting from what was then a small hosting service based in Los Angeles called Dreamhost. And thus the new Harn list was born, and that operated as an email discussion list for about 4 years.
I think that's when I came on board the Harn list. It was probably sometime after you took over. So that takes us from sort of about 98 through 2002. So what happened then?
Well, it became evident to me that email discussion lists are clunky, they're hard to use, they're harder to maintain. And at the same time, the internet was expanding exponentially quickly. There was a vast array of new cool-looking websites out there. So in 2002, I looked around for a replacement for the Harn list. I had a couple of ulterior motives. One of those was to make my life easier, and the other one was to learn about this newfangled thing called the World Wide Web. And newfangled, it was a couple of years old by then, but I was a bit slow catching up. So I figured that learning about that wouldn't do my chances of future gainful employment any harm whatsoever. The first of those, making my life easier, still applies, and learning about the World Wide Web did indeed lead to gainful employment, but just not in the way I anticipated. So instead of creating websites and so forth, for the past 20 years, I've been involved in protecting people from the dangers of, or more properly from, the internet. I work in what's now known as cybersecurity. Anyway, in 2002, I shifted from the Harn list to the Harn forum. It uses an application called PHPBB, BB standing for bulletin board, obviously, and it still does. It still uses the same software, obviously not the same version.
So that explains where the Harn forum comes from. Where did Lithia.com come into the picture?
Well, there was another Harn activity that I was engaged in at the time, and that's writing Fanon. I was part of the original Vemian foursome. There was myself, Patrick Nilsson, Andy Staples, Andy Gibson, all from the Harn list. and we were joined a little bit later on by Anders Burston. We wanted to write material and let others download it for their own use, but there wasn't really a convenient way of doing that. And others, like you, Kerry, also wanted to do that. And I think you started with Lady of Paladins.
Yeah, that was back, that's going back 2001, when I was working with Patrick Nielsen on his Swords and Shields website.
So once again, with the same sense of responsibility that I had in 1998, I looked around for a way to make that happen. And so Lithia.com was created. Interestingly, I started out with the domain harnworld.com, but CGI thought that was a bit much, and they asked me to hand it over to them, and I basically sold it to them for the price of the original purchase. And I went out and bought Lithia.com. So that's how Lithia.com was created. Both Lithia.com, which uses WordPress, and Harn Forum, which still uses PHPB, as I said, are created and maintained with my primary ulterior motive in mind, making my life easier. Apart from a couple of occasions over the years when I've needed to put in a few weeks of intensive work to make sure things didn't go south on me in a bad way, running both the download site and the community discussion site are dead easy, and they take almost no effort. And that's become even easier over the years as support for the software has improved. Lithia.com especially almost looks after itself these days. It automatically updates the base WordPress software, it monitors traffic, maintains security, and even backs itself up on a regular basis. All I have to do is occasionally go in and update the plugin I use to manage the downloads. Oh, and I have to vet new Fanon and upload it, and we all know how long that can take, don't we, Kerry?
Lychee lag, very famous.
There you have it. That's the story of the evolution of Lithia.com and the Harn Forum. They evolved naturally. I didn't have any kind of plan. That's just the way they ended up.
Cool. So this leads us to kind of a sensitive area of discussion. We all are aware of the split between Robin Crosby and Columbia Games. How did you handle that when that circumstance reared its ugly head?
Those were a couple of tough years. I had a personal relationship with Robin. In 1996, I took a sabbatical from work and I decided to travel the world. And in 1997, I flew to Vancouver to meet Robin, and I stayed with him and his family. The excuse I was using was to pick up a mint condition copy of all of the Encyclopedia Harnica publications that Robin had signed. And I convinced Eric Hotz to sign them as well. And I still have them all safely tucked away. And if anybody's out there and is willing to offer me a great deal of money for them, I'm willing to listen to offers.
I'm sure it would be a pricey event to purchase those. There's no way for Robin to sign anymore now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Later in the Oren years, he stayed at my place in Canberra. Oren is a company in Brisbane, and he came out to visit them. And he flew down to Canberra and attended a local gaming convention with me. And then I took him up to Sydney so that he could have a bit of a tour around Sydney, even though I don't particularly like Sydney myself. So when he asked me to back his fight with CGI by complying with the new Celestia Fanon license in 2006, it was a pretty tough decision to make, particularly because he kind of wanted me to enforce it on all Fanon that I published on the website. In the end, after a fairly large amount of research about copyright on my part, and an expensive consultation with my solicitor, that's another word for lawyer for our American cousins, I decided that I couldn't really know enough about the messy legal situation to take either side. Robin was in Canada, CGI by this time was in America, I'm in Australia, and there was just too much uncertainty. So I published my stance about that on Lithia.com in 2008, and you can find it there today. I won't repeat it here, but if you click on the About link, and about halfway down the page is a link to the page on publishing fan-written material, and that basically tells you what my stance is.
So how does this affect what you do with Lithia.com?
Well, the first thing that it affects is that I treat CGI and Calestia Publications equally. They can both write posts on the Harn Forum and on Lithia.com. I don't make any editorial comments about their products. I don't publish opinion pieces about them myself, although my platforms can be used by others to do so. But I reserve the right to remove any I find a bit too much. And I don't really bother defining what too much is. I'll know it when I see it, or more importantly, I'll probably have it pointed out to me. The second thing is to stick with what is written in the post we spoke about earlier, especially about making certain Robin's copyright is acknowledged. Everything written in or about Harn is what's known as a derivative work. The original idea was Robin's, so his original copyright must be acknowledged. I also encourage authors to include their own copyright because a derivative work is still the author's creation. This is allowed because we have implicit permission from Calestia Productions to publish derivative works provided they're free of charge. And we also have the implicit permission of CGI as well, although that lies at the heart of the contractual dispute.
It's a very difficult subject and one that has been the subject of many discussions, some quite acrimonious on the Harn Forum, which we don't need to repeat here. But I do, as a user of Harn Forum and as a user of Lithia.com, I greatly appreciate your openness and your support for all of us fan and creators. It's something that that really helps me. It means I don't have to maintain a website. And one of the things that I've really found is that when things first started, there were many, many Harn websites. And Bill Gant used to have a whole page dedicated just to the different Harn websites. And over the years, most of them have disappeared. And the very nice thing is that Lithia.com has kind of picked up the banner for some of those other websites and become a place where that fanon that would otherwise be lost when a website disappears has found a home at Lithia.com, and that's something I really appreciate.
That in itself carries its own dangers, of course. If you centralize all of your resources into one place like Lithia.com, it's easy to find until it's no longer there, and then everything goes. And succession planning is something that's weighing a little bit on my mind, and I know we've talked about it before a little bit as well, Kerry, but that is a bit of an issue. You know, what happens if I suddenly fall under a bus, or you know, COVID-19 creeps in, whatever. For some reason, I'm no longer here. What happens to the website? So that's still not completely resolved, and I need to probably talk a bit more about that with some people.
And that's one of the things actually that I've thought of as well is that many occasions where people have written very impressive fanon and then disappeared from the Harn forums and the Harn world, people come along later and say, I'm looking for this piece of fanon and I have downloaded it on my hard drive. It's not my fanon to give out. And so one of the things that I've made a point of is to give to Peter in writing that should I ever go out of contact, that he can continue to freely upload my material onto Lithia.com or any successor website so that it doesn't go out of print, so to speak, or doesn't disappear from circulation. So it's something to consider, you know, that you want your material to be able to be available to fans years into the future.
There's lots of lots of things around that, and that's one of the issues about, you know, the fact that this stuff is all free. What does actually free mean? You know, it does actually cost money to have these websites. It costs authors time, lots and lots of blood, sweat, and tears, but mostly time to create these things. If they're being made for free, and they're being made available, I'm sure those authors want them to be available forever, effectively.
And not only that, though, one of the things is that an author of many Fanon articles, I've spent quite a bit of money paying for both maps and art to be created for those articles. And I have had pointed out to me on a few occasions where my articles and parts of my articles and artwork shown up on other websites and have been taken and modified. In particular, there was a website for Game of Thrones scenarios, and somebody had taken a number of my articles and redone them for Game of Thrones. And I was both flattered and slightly annoyed. I did contact the author and asked him, I said, you know, this is obviously my work, and you have not acknowledged me in any of these new versions you've posted. And so he did agree to redo his articles and put my name and the original contact information and the original a link to Lithia.com. And then I allowed him to go ahead and still use them as Game of Thrones, as long as he acknowledged my copyright and acknowledged the original article that it was based on. So there is, even for Fanon authors, there are copyright issues to be considered.
Yep, absolutely. And what you did was absolutely right. The way to do that kind of stuff is, there's no reason why he couldn't adjust it for himself. I think the role-playing game for Game of Thrones is called A Song of Fire and Ice, and there's a lot of hard material that would be perfect for that particular setting, with a bit of juggling here and there. But yeah, I think what you did was right, and you took active measures to protect your copyright, which is what you must do in order to protect that copyright.
I know a number of people have suggested to you that Lithia.com should put up a donation button or set up a Patreon account so that people can contribute to the cost of running the site. Why haven't you ever done that?
It's kind of bound up in the whole delicate balancing act of publishing Fanon. That has to be free, because charging for it would be a direct violation of the implicit agreement with both parties. So if I were to put up a Patreon account, firstly, some of that money goes elsewhere, and why the heck should they benefit from people's generosity? Second, I'm also using the hosting for my own personal sites. It's not just Lithia.com on that hosting. I've got a couple of other websites on there as well. The hosting space itself is used by a number of other people and organisations in Australia. And so those people pay me for that hosting. They don't pay me a hell of a lot, but they pay me a little bit. And finally, it doesn't actually cost all that much. I have a really, really good deal with my hosting service. I've been with them since, as I said, 2002. So I've got longevity. So how much money could I make out of a donate button or some other funding source like Patreon? The issue is that I could potentially make way more than it actually costs. And that's now making a profit. And so from an accounting point of view, how much is too much? When would I be legally in breach of the don't make any money out of Robin's creation rule? Could I actually claim that the management and technical work that I do to maintain the site are a cost that I should be reimbursed for? Well, probably, at least to some degree. But the question remains, how much is too much? It's impossible to quantify that. So it's just far easier and more compliant, legally speaking, to fund the costs myself and not bother to ask anybody else for cash. At the end of the day, I can afford it. I've got a good job. And the total cost isn't all that much in real dollar terms. In terms of time, well, I know how long it takes to write Hahn material and Fanon. And Fanon authors like you, Kerry, don't get paid for your effort. Since the amount of time I spend maintaining the site is about the same time as if I were writing for Hahn, I reckon we're even. And besides, I'm lazy, and writing takes effort. You know, maintaining Lithia.com and the Hahn forum, that's pretty easy compared to that. And it's an easy way to contribute to the community. Kerry, your form of a payment for things you write are the comments people make and the download counters on those articles. Mine is the occasional thanks that people like you write to me, And honestly, I don't really need anything more than the thanks that I've already received. It's as simple as that, really. Kerry, you and I first met at HarnCon 1 in Vancouver. That's 20 years ago now. What memories do you still have from that time?
Oh, it's hard to believe it's 20 years already. I have to say, the first memory that jumps to mind is actually playing in a scenario, I think it was Hallmoot, run by Andy Gibson in the courtyard next to the room that we'd rented at Simon Fraser University. And myself and the other player characters were peasants in a village in Wrentham. And I think there was a person had been discovered on the property. The PCs had cooked up a lie to say that, you know, nope, nothing unusual has happened. And they were all called to Hallmoot, and they all stuck to the story, and they figured that the manor lord, you know, had been tricked and we'd pulled the wool over his eyes. And Andy, in this just massive booming voice, says, "No, that's not all." And I still remember like how loud it was and how intimidated I was by Andy. And it's one of those things that 20 years later still sticks with me. But that was a great convention. Again, it goes to show you don't need a huge location and fancy decorations to have a great convention. We were in like basically one big classroom, and if we kind of spilled out into the hallways and a few adjoining areas. And I just remember what a great time we had. We played the first succession crisis scenario, and I remember playing Archbishop Adeen Kinn and being the Machiavellian type and trying to sway different groups and parties. It was a great event. What about you, Peter? What memories do you have of the first HarnCon in Vancouver?
I remember a bright sunny afternoon at an outdoor restaurant, and a large and boisterous chap, quite good looking, who seemed to be the life of the party. So I just shut up and let you talk. Well, okay, maybe I didn't shut up all that much. I remember sitting quietly in the classroom we'd hired at Simon Fraser and watching two tables of people intent on the game that was unfolding in front of them. And I also remember seeing Robin and Tom set up a board and start a war game. And I thought how ironic it was that the two people responsible for bringing Harn World and Harn Master to the public weren't even interested in watching others play it, but they reverted to their old gaming habits. Mind you, I think it was possibly the last time Tom and Robin were at peace with each other. And I also remember the pleasure I felt meeting my partner in crime, Brian McNeely. I may have come up with the idea for the HarnCon, and I might have paid for some things and made some guarantees and stuff like that. But I was in Australia, and I needed some hands and feet in Canada. And Brian was my man on the spot. That con could not have happened without his superb assistance, and I still thank him for it. Okay, well, I think that about wraps it up for now. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast and have a better understanding of why our community ended up where it does today. Next time, we'll bring you some discussions about Harn World itself, and we'll see you then.
Look forward to your questions, and bye for now.